Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
84% of all overseas adoptions come through Asia, and the current wait for an Australian family in these cases is usually around about 5 years. John O'Neill serves as the chairman of the National Adoption Awareness Week Board, is an adoptee himself, and has adopted his son from South Korea. John, thank you for your time. Thank you for joining Open House this afternoon.
Well, thanks for inviting me on.
Tell me, how would these improvements have changed your process in adopting your son, Jusang?
Well, they are a very important sort of first step in a more general reform process. When I adopted my son, we came back from Korea in 2005 with him as a little six-month-old child, and we were really surprised to discover that although we'd been through 3 years of the adoption process, he still wasn't recognised as our son in the eyes of the law. So we had to apply for what was called an adoption order via the Supreme Court. That process is more paperwork. Every page of your application, which includes lots of identification papers and so on, needs to be notarised by a lawyer or a JP. Some hundreds of dollars of application fees, and can take up to 12 months. Emotionally, in the meantime, the negative surprise for us was that we were advised, even if we wanted to travel interstate, we had to have a letter from the Department of Family and Community Services, which indicated that our child was still, what I took to mean, a ward of the state in the care of the Federal Attorney General, yes, in our custody, but only in only in that status, and that was the case until the actual adoption order was complete. In circumstances, as it happened, that were relevant to us, where you want to go overseas with your child, our child travelled on his South Korean passport with us to China. We've got the same flimsy bit of paper from the Department of Family and Community Services as to his status, and we were quite nervous about whether we might be challenged as to why we had this child with us. So that, with the sweep of a pen under the agency of the Attorney General with the Prime Minister's imprimatur, all changed on Tuesday. And from now on, any parent who brings their child into the country from either Taiwan or South Korea, having been through the appropriate, fully ethical, checked and balanced adoption process, the moment they arrive back in Australia with their child, that child is recognised as their child in the eyes of the Australian law.
John, I can't imagine the stress that would be involved. You know, you've climbed every hurdle triumphantly. You finally have your little family, and now the paperwork continues for up to a year after that fact. Can I ask if there are similar obstacles for people who adopt Australian children? Clearly, border crossings aren't a problem domestically, but are there other issues attendant to domestic adoptions?
Well, the issue with domestic adoption is really related to foster care primarily. So because of, I guess, the widespread use of birth control in the last 30, 40 years, there are far less children who are provided for adoption through a process that would traditionally have been the case at, you know, there's been much talked about, you know, the sort of so-called forced adoption environments where you had mums who had kids out of wedlock in the 60s, as my mother did with me, and through dint of shame and social mores, go away, have their children privately and hand them over for adoption. That has all changed. And so in Australia, there are very few kids who find themselves up for adoption in those circumstances. Typically now, the way in which kids find that they are in need of secure and permanent and loving families is that they've come through an environment of some considerable dysfunction and by order of the state end up being in foster care. Now, the issue here is that kids who end up in foster care tend to revolve through at least half a dozen sets of foster carers during probably the first 10, 12 years of their life. And what we are advocating, and New South Wales is, the government in New South Wales is leading the way on this, is that there needs to be an earlier permanent intervention by the state in recognising that even where you've got birth parents who might be resistant to the idea that their child is going to be adopted into another family, that if indeed that is in the best interest of the child for that to occur, then that should be a decision that is taken so that person can have permanent secure attachment from as early an age as possible. So there are about 18,000 kids in foster care in Australia right now, and they are all probably experiencing, in various different ways, the trauma of separation time and again as they get cycled through different families, some of who may, of course, be extremely loving and may even wish to adopt.
Yeah. John, the issue of security for kids, what assurances have we got that this more expedient process doesn't put that in jeopardy?
It comes really to making sure that there is the capacity in the country through which the kids are being adopted to support ethical adoption processes. So if we just take the case of South Korea, for example, South Korea has a very long-established process which involves accredited agencies to ensure that the kids who are being made available for adoption, are kids who come from circumstances that are, to do with the social mores in society and not, kids who, because you've got great poverty, which in fact, of course, you don't nowadays in Korea, have been put up for adoption, frankly, for the benefit of commercial gain. And that's obviously the big, big concern. So it really is why, from a Commonwealth government point of view, when it comes to inter-country adoption, it's absolutely essential that the government is engaged in quality assuring, if you like, the systems and processes that reside in the countries where children are being made available for adoption by Australian parents. Now, there are some great principles that have been established through the Hague Convention that either apply in a multilateral sense or that can be stress-tested in bilateral relationships. But that is certainly the critical way to ensure that this is ethical, an ethical adoption process with the right checks and balances. And we're certainly advocating in the reform of the adoption process that all of those, accreditation and systemic kind of reevaluation of capacity is maintained.
Okay, the rubber meets the road question, John, here. While there clearly have been improvements in the process once you've secured a young child to join your family through the adoption process, what about the wait in getting there? Have these streamlined mechanisms made that a more efficient process? Can we cut it back from 5 or more years to something more approachable?
Well, our view is that ideally it should approach the period of gestation, which is 9 months. We believe that it's quite incredible if you think about two things here. First of all, when I adopted back in 2005, we thought 3 years was a pretty long time.
Yeah.
As you said in your introduction, the mean is now 5 years, which is, really, substandard. It's the lowest and the slowest rate of adoption in the OECD in Australia.
And incredibly stressful for families going through this process too.
Absolutely. And just to get a sense of scale, we only had 126 inter-country adoptions in Australia last year. There were 330 adoptions, including adoptions out of foster care and so on, domestically, 330. And this is 70% down on the number of adoptions that occurred in Australia 25 years ago. So we're certain that there are tens of thousands of ready, willing, able and capable families in this country who would embrace and provide a permanent, secure, loving family to what, by definition, are literally millions of children in the world who need that. And we say that this system is still very broken, and the Prime Minister, to his credit, has said he will champion through the Council of Australian Governments top-to-toe reform, so we have more relationships potentially with more countries and more relationships with more agencies in more countries with the appropriate checks and balances to try and make sure that this process, for the interests of these kids who every day, is a day of, destruction, frankly, for them to not be in the environment they could, that this system is improved and sped up. And that's a process of reform that is yet to occur, but which the Prime Minister has said he will champion. And what we saw this week is proof in the pudding as he took the very important first symbolic step that was within his immediate purview.
And so frustrating that it's taken this long for one simple decision to take action and then somebody to step right in. So, next immediate step for those going through adoption. Can we see the immediate impacts of this decision? If I were to start the adoption process now, is life measurably easier for me today than it was yesterday or last week?
Only in the post-adoption piece from either Taiwan or Korea. So, the next step in the process, so the Prime Minister announced he was going to back this significant top-to-toe reform agenda just before Christmas. There was a function at Kirribilli House, and what he did then was commission the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet to chair an interdepartmental committee to bring to the table when all the premiers get together with him, which I think is it was to be April, I believe it might now be early May, to say, okay, how are we now going to get change within the course of this current calendar year? So that will be the next really significant step in the reform process to see what gets tabled and what initiatives flow from that process. And we'll be certainly continuing public discourse and continuing to keep the community more broadly informed about the need to see our governments holistically adopt change through the next phase of this process, which we expect to be surfaced in some detail off the back of the COAG meeting in May, in early May.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.